Okay, I'm recording now. What time is it over there now?
9:05 a.m.
Oh, it's early.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is late for me. Early is 5.
Do you wake up at 5?
Yeah, usually because my baby's screaming. Yeah.
Oh yeah. You have a new baby? A newborn baby? Yeah,
Harlow. She's turning 1 tomorrow. So, yeah. She's turning into a little tot now. So, less baby time and more running around and creating a mess and breaking things. So, which is
that's
nice.
Fun.
Yeah.
Have you regretted anything yet?
No, not really. Like, we planned to have a baby, and we planned to have her before COVID. So everyone's like, "Oh, you guys have a COVID baby," and I was like, "No, like this is we planned it just before COVID," and then COVID unfolded, and you know the rest of it. So
COVID was secondary.
Yeah, it's like no, we wanted to have a baby before the world went sideways.
But it was the perfect time to have a baby though, no? Because you guys were working from home, I'm sure, and you know, like you guys could be like way more hands-on than usual.
Exactly. You know, my fiance can help me. You know, she does things like just helps out with like food and lunch and just, you know, supporting me with like you know, just things I need to get done during the day, like errands and stuff like that. And it's great because I can see my daughter throughout the day and not feel like I'm too far away from the family, which is nice as well. Working from home has its challenges just mentally, like trying to separate the two worlds, but it's certainly a good thing. I would much rather be at home than be in an office and then come home at the end of the day.
I bet. And well, yeah. That's awesome. Congrats on having a baby. I hope that's only a beginning of having a much, much, much bigger family. Is that the plan or no?
Yeah, we're going to have two. We're going to have two. Yeah. Yeah. Excited. We don't mind what gender. It's all good. But we reckon that a little baby Harlow, she's probably going to be lonely if she's all by lonesome. So one of my business mentors is like, yeah, one day you'll see them sitting in a corner drawing with crayons by themselves and you'll just feel like they need a friend. So I was like, okay, we'll probably have two, I reckon. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to have a sibling, but I'll never forget when my ex got a puppy, and not to compare your beautiful child with a puppy, but it's just an example.
having a puppy is kind of like having a baby. Like,
you know, yeah, and
it's a lot. That's a lot you need to do.
He would always be like, yeah, I'm going to get another one just because I feel like this one's like, you know, lonely and she doesn't have anyone to play with. So like, you know, we kind of had this like back and forth. And he finally got another puppy and they hated each other.
Oh, that's awful.
They hated each other. Like they kept getting into fights and like getting like super territorial and like, you know, and I was like, see, this is what happens when you don't listen to your girlfriend.
Yeah.
I agree.
I've many a times contemplated getting a second dog and my fiance is like, hell no, we're not getting a second dog. So yeah, I'm glad she kept me away from that because it probably would have been much the same, I reckon.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm having Dane Walker. I love your last name, by the way. That's a really cool last name. I watched a show when I was really, really young and it was about this secret agent girl who would like go around the world and like save the world. And her name was Sarah Walker. And I always thought, oh my God, Walker is such a cool last name.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a Johnny Walker fan too. So yeah, I'm equally a fan.
Yeah. It's cool. So, you're the founder of your agency, a brand specialist. What's the name of your agency?
Rival.
Where obviously you provide your clients with the best design and brand strategy solutions to, grow their market and get some more attention and get some more clients, hopefully. So how long have you, when did you find this passion for this, to do this?
Yeah, I've always had creative passion. You know, for more insight on what I do exactly is, you know, I run a branding agency and clients come to us with a lot of problems, but typically it's around, hey, I have a company. I'm not really happy with the branding. Can you help? And then through diagnosis, we get to figure out, okay, you know, maybe their logo, they're not happy with it and they don't like the color palette. But more importantly than then the design elements is typically business owners just need a bit more clarity about how they should be communicating themselves. So we do a lot about around communication, like how can we effectively communicate with people? So kind of how I got here as a kid, I was always quite creative. Like I'd always be drawing Spider-Man, or I'd be building tree houses, or I'd be, you know, creatively trying to build and do things that I thought were interesting and also challenging. You know, fast forward through high school, and I was, you know, I was very much into video games and building communities in video games and kind of geeking out here, but I played World of Warcraft, and, you know, I would build clans and guilds, and we would fight together, so to speak. And it was almost like running a small business, like running a guild on World of Warcraft in the early 2000s was you'd have a roster of 40 people and you have to show up at a certain time and you have to train people. It's intense. So I think I've always kind of leaned toward, you know, leadership, community, developing skills and working with people to achieve a greater goal. Moving into my adolescence, I had, you know, a job in a t-shirt shop. So I was like screen printing t-shirts in a retail setting. So not only was I in a factory, like making the merchandise, but I was like at the counter as people walked into the shop and would grab things off the shelf. But they come over to the counter and say, "Hey, I'm launching my own label. Can you design a logo for me in 10 minutes? And I want these 20 t-shirts printed today." So I worked there for 5 years. I got really good at like logo design. I got really good at like just quickly designing things in Illustrator and Photoshop. And I was quite passionate about, you know, the retail space. So like, interestingly, I was designing all day, but then simultaneously selling all day and communicating all day and problem solving all day and making the goods every day and running a shop like by myself most of the time. Like I'd open it, I'd you know, set up the merchandise, I'd set up the displays in the windows. I would, you know, turn all the equipment on. I'll be printing and making t-shirts all day. So I got in the swing of like being multifaceted, if that makes any sense, in the design space. Because if you chat to typical designers, they're not really salespeople or customer service oriented. It's a massive generalization. I've seen the latter, but it's
they're mostly into the art and design part of it, not so much the business themselves.
A bit more introverted, a bit more I want to sit in my corner and do my thing. So for me, I wasn't an extrovert. I kind of forced myself, because I always liked the challenge, I'd always force myself to go and challenge myself to be in people's faces. But yeah, I worked there for 5 years. I left there and I went through lots of sales jobs. Like I worked for insurance companies, car sales companies, telecommunication companies. I did telecommunication services. I did a lot of retail and sales oriented jobs for
learn the psychology of selling and dealing with people.
Yeah. And I really enjoy it. Like I love the process of sales. Like for me, it's it's not about how can I swindle this person to buy my stuff. It's about how can I diagnose what they need and fit what we have to that. And if it doesn't fit, then move them along. But how do I get as many of the opportunities to find the right fits as possible? So to me, sales is really about just trying to fit the right people to the right product and doing that as quickly as you possibly can and trying to make commissions and so on. So that's kind of where my brain was for a decade. And then I came full circle. I come back to design. I was looking at buying a gym with a franchise partner. I just decided that the gym space, it wasn't something I wanted to stay in. And so I just got a little retail job so I could figure out, okay, well, what am I going to do now? I knew I wanted to start a company. I just didn't know what. I saw Gary Vee speak in Brisbane here in Australia. And he said, just start. Whatever the business is, just go start it. So I said, okay. On the way home, decided, you know what? I'm just going to start an agency. Like I'm going to make content for people on social media. That should be easy enough. And 2 weeks goes by and I set up a little website. I did a little, registered a business. I got all my software and everything set up and I just had a crappy little laptop. That's where it started. I just started doing cheap $50 posters and $100 posts on Instagram and it just cascaded. 2 years later, you know, we have 14 people on the team. We're hiring another 5 people this month. Wow. We're probably going to be scaling to maybe a 45 people operation in the next 12 to 24 months. We're just about to close a deal with Coca-Cola. you know, so there's a lot happening in a very combusted time frame. But yeah, I really honestly enjoy what I do. I love the problems that running an agency has, but yeah, that's a snip of what I've been doing for the last 2 years.
They say, you know, you love what you do when you love to solve the kind of problems it throws at you.
Yeah. I think business owners try to tackle everything from an analytical perspective. And I like how branding is trying to tackle everything from an emotional perspective. So it's a different way of selling, like, rather than, you know, promoting the features and benefits and what, you know, people might think are a good reason to sell something. Branding is a lot more about how do I get into people's minds? How do I own real estate and have them psychologically be attracted to what we're doing, not because of what they get, but because of what it means to be a part of whatever that brand is doing. It's like, why do people buy Gucci? They don't buy it because it's, you know, because of the fabric or because it's
pretty.
Because it's pretty. Really, they buy it as a status symbol. Like, look at me, I'm wearing Gucci and I'm upper class and I'm XYZ. It's you signaling to the world, look at who I am. That's not a bad thing. It's human nature. So like, how do you tap into that? How do you get brands, not just in the fashion industry, but how do you get brands to tap into that energy in any industry? Like, you know, for God's sakes, like John Deere is a tractor company and people fall head over heels for that logo.
Yeah. And I noticed you have that in your work as well, when you mentioned that you're not necessarily selling an item, you're selling a feeling. So can you explain like what exactly, like, let's, you know, dig that a little deeper. Cause like what you're saying right now makes so much sense. Exactly. That like these brands are selling a feeling, superiority, right?
Yeah. Like if you think about Nike as a company, and just if you're listening to this now and you just think of, okay, what is Nike? You probably think of, you know, athletes, you probably think of Just Do It, you probably think of a lot of the marketing around it and what it means emotionally, right? So at the end of the day, Nike is a corporation that manufactures shoes and sells shoes, right? So it doesn't sound very sexy. Where they sell is not, hey, we make good shoes. Like, you'll never see an advertisement by Nike like saying, we make fantastic shoes and they have the best rubbers and they have the best, you know, latex. And they have, right?
Yeah, no, never.
Yeah, they don't, that's not how they position themselves. You know, if you look at what emotion is Nike trying to sell, they're trying to sell confidence. So if you look at the tagline, just do it, that's a precursor to what? The emotion of feeling confident. So the same as Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola don't say, we make beautiful fizzy drinks that rot your teeth and all the rest of it. they say, we sell happiness in a bottle. So, you know, Coca-Cola is selling happiness and Nike is selling confidence and Starbucks is selling belonging. You know, so companies aren't selling.
What did you say Starbucks is selling?
They're selling belonging. Like, you feel like belonging, you're a part of a culture, you're a part of a group. Mm. Like, you know, like if you think about Starbucks's model, it's all about sitting down and having a coffee among a group of strangers and being a part of this community. It's like, I feel like I belong this morning. Like, I'm here having a coffee with all these hustle and bustlers that are like me, and I feel like I belong. And they tap into the millennial generation specifically. So, if you think about these huge brands, like, scale it down to the littlest and smallest brands. There's a company, it's called Liquid Death. And all it is, if you look this guy up, all it is, it's water, like H2O, just plain old water, like you would get in any water bottle. And he sells it in a metal can, and it has like death metal typography, and it has like this character that looks like it's something out of a horror comic book with a guitar and this strange looking head that's a can.
But it's really water?
It's just water. It's dramatic. The point
that
is,
should have been Coke's name.
Yeah, exactly.
But then it would be too true and you don't want honesty.
No, exactly. Like, this company, what they realized was that at metal concerts and punk concerts and these big festivals, people wouldn't be drinking water. They would be drinking Mother or Red Bull or an energy drink. And they wanted to bring health awareness to be like, well, you need to be hydrated if you're dancing for like 8 hours straight. Yeah, right. So they said, well, we need to brand it to the crowd. So rather than trying to say, hey, crowd, you need to drink water, it's like, well, hey, why don't we just build them what they think is cool? Let's put it in a can. And they raised $40 million capital in the past, you know, 24 months, like a new company. Yeah.
So it's only like those people go and they're like, oh, that drink looks cool, I'm going to buy it. Kind of probably regardless of what's even in it. And then come to find out it's water. And they're like, okay, fine, I'll have water.
it's like they're selling extreme or they're selling drama.
Yeah.
You know, people could buy water for like a fraction of the cost.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, so branding is about, okay, what business do you have? What emotion do your target customers desire? And then how can we sell that to them so they want to buy our products?
And so do you work with only brands that are like a tangible product and like something that you buy? Or have you ever worked with, let's say, maybe a brand that's not necessarily selling you a thing?
Mm.
And how does that differ?
Yeah, we work with service-based companies, like companies that offer a service. Mm-hmm. We offer branding for personal brands, people that are looking to get TED Talks or they're looking to speak. Branding applies to any and all businesses. You know, we've got clients that, they're doing a book release and they want to do some PR and they want to have a nice book cover that we're going to design for their PR release. And then we have other customers who run, you know, HR firms and they don't really sell a product, but they sell a service. So they say, hey, come over to us. We're trustworthy. We're able to build you the best possible HR solutions for your company. How do you make that sexy and emotional for people versus, you know, just like blending into the rest of the HR companies that exist in their market? So branding is, for me, it's at least about how do we take something and differentiate it within a space that's busy. Like if you look at the fashion space, dramatically busy. How can you succeed as a fashion company? You're going to have to be different. Otherwise, you're not going to turn heads.
And you figure out based on that brand's audience or buyers, how can they basically find their uniqueness and, you know, stay different?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's quite a simple formula and it's just rarely executed well. The way we look at branding is rather than saying, hey, I've designed a beautiful product over here, come and try it. It's more around looking at, hey, there's an audience over here that aren't being fulfilled. Let's build something around them. So rather than saying, come over here, we're saying, hey, we'll come over to you. We'll build something around you. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is like for ourselves as an agency, I'll just talk about Rival and what we're doing is we're not trying to partner up with any and all companies. We're trying to partner up with companies that want to be disruptive, bold, mm-hmm. unique, different, and they want to aggressively scale. So we're like, okay, what are the personality traits of those types of business owners? They're usually eccentric. They're usually go-getters. They're usually busy bees. They're usually running around with their heads on fire. So how do I get the attention of those folks? I have to be really quick and brash and effective at getting their attention. So we built our brand around that audience rather than trying to say, I think this is cool. I hope I get customers. Mm. So good branding is around really defining not the demographics, like the age, the location and XYZ of your target consumer. It's about like the psychology, like, you know, what's their behavior? What do they seek in life? What's important and meaningful to them? How do we target those things in an individual to attract them? So branding is about attracting and pulling people in, whereas marketing is probably a bit more pushing out. Like, I'm going to use this vehicle to get attention. I'm going to put a billboard up in the city. I'm going to go, you know, run a PR campaign through a news outlet. I'm going to put this person's face in a magazine. That's like a push. That's like marketing. But like, how do I create a message, mm-hmm. a story, or an emotional atmosphere to attract people to want to come to me and inquire with me? So that's the differentiator for me. And that's mm-hmm. what I believe a lot of businesses are lacking. So yeah, we help people of every situation. We've had people come to us and say, look, we're launching a business in 6 months. We need a company name. We need a logo. We need a color palette. We need a message. We need a target consumer. We need marketing research, and we'll do that whole package. Mm-hmm. Other times people come to us, like we had a Mexican food chain that had been around for 40 years. They have 36 locations. And they said, hey, our brand's dated. It's getting old. People don't care about it anymore. Our old generation don't come to our restaurant anymore because they've aged so much that they don't want to go out for food anymore. Like, how do we transition into a younger audience? And that's what we call rebranding. It's like, okay, well, your old campaign's no longer effective. It was for 40 years, but how do we rejuvenate it and evolve it into something that will work for you? Let's do a new logo. Let's introduce some new color palettes. You know, Taco Bell is a great example of a company that was getting dated and completely revolutionized their franchise. And if you look at their plans for the next 5 years, it's pretty remarkable what they're going to go and do.
Well, okay. So then you explained the difference between branding and marketing. So branding is when you basically set the tone for your company and for your brand so that it attracts people. Marketing is when you send a push, something like an advertisement or something to basically go after customers and bring them in.
Yeah, branding and marketing, like they're so overlapped. Like it's hard because you could argue that they kind of fall on the same chessboard, so to speak. They're different pieces, but they're on the same competitive field. So for me, branding is, it's really about the personality behind the brand. Like if you think about Harley Davidson, the motorcycle company, if you think about like, if Harley Davidson was a person, how would they dress? You'd probably say, well, leather jacket, ripped jeans, you know, boots, scuff marks on them. They'd probably have some facial hair.
Yeah.
They'd probably have a pair of aviators. They'd probably have long wavy hair. They're not wearing a helmet. You know, and they've probably got real dirty, greasy hands because they like to, you know, be out on the road and working on bikes.
Right.
And if you think about, okay, well, how would that person talk? Well, they wouldn't be a corporate person. They would be very much like, I want my freedom. I want to be on the highway. I want to go on an adventure. I want to go for a ride. So if you think about brands like Harley Davidson, there's a lot of personality behind the brands. A different company that everybody knows is Apple. Like if you think about how would Apple dress, you probably think of the Apple versus PC commercial where there's the two actors and one's representing Apple and the other one's representing PC. And the Apple guy is kind of cool, smart, casual, and kind of sarcastic and cheeky, but witty and playful. So like these brands, they have personalities behind them. Branding is about how do I flesh out a personality? How do I message that to the marketplace? How do I connect with an individual on an emotional level? And how do I attract them to want to become a part of my tribe? So, you know, if I'm the CEO of Gucci, people want to buy Gucci so that they can be a part of the tribe. I'm a part of this upper class, you know, wealthy, luxurious tribe. This is who I am. This is what I want people to perceive me to be. Whereas marketing is a lot more about, you know, diagnosing problems in the business. Okay. Like we have targets we need to hit, and what vehicles are we going to deploy to help us resolve these targets, and how do we get ROI, and how do we push ourselves into the marketplace with what tools, and what's the plans, and what's the deadlines, and what's the game plan? Like it's all strategical. It's all about what vehicles are we going to jump in. It's all about how we get to go out and push into the marketplace with some strategy. You know, marketing has communication. Marketing also has like things like, you know, obviously you're going to deploy your branding through a marketing vehicle. So then branding and marketing need to work fantastically together to create a successful business. But they're really serving two masters. Branding is more about emotions, connection, storytelling, and having a dialogue, whereas marketing is more about, you know, garnering attention, driving traffic, getting conversion. And they're going to work hand in hand, but a lot of businesses, they kind of drop the ball on branding because you can have a weak brand, have a strong marketing campaign and make good money. The problem is as soon as you turn the marketing campaign off, where do your customers go? They stop coming in. Is if you build a strong brand, here's the great thing is brand equity lasts a long time if it's done right. Like if Coca-Cola sold their logo and their name, it's probably worth like $7 billion, $8 billion, just the logo. And that's taken 100 years to build that equity. But it's they can turn their marketing campaign off and Coca-Cola would still probably make a lot of money. People are still going to buy it because of the relationship that they have.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, what's the biggest misconception or what are some of the most popular mistakes you see people make like early on when they start a brand?
Typically they try to design first. Like we'll have businesses come to us and they'll say, hey, we've got a logo. We just don't like it. And we've got a color palette. We're not sure about it. And you know, we've got a website and it's not really doing well. And then we go, great. Show us your company values. Oh, we have them up in our head. Show us your mission statement. I don't know where that is. What's your tagline? I don't have one. What's your elevator pitch? I don't know. Why does your company exist? Oh, we exist to give good products to the world. Okay. Like you see what I mean? Like it's a pretty weak argument from a business owner. So what we typically say to them is like, look, we need to start off with strategy. Like most people skip strategy, overlook it, underestimate its purpose and its function and its value. And they go straight to design and then straight into marketing. What I suggest business owners do is they have to do a comprehensive strategy with somebody who knows what they're doing. And that would be fleshing out company values. And typically it's like five words that define your company. You know, like if you look at like my brand Rival, like one of our core values is soulful. Like everything we do, we put all our energy into it. Even if we have different moral beliefs than the customers, even if we have a different outlook on life than the customers, we want to go into their world and create something that's deep and meaningful for them because they've come to us for that service. So we're very soulful about how we deploy things. It might sound like, oh, that sounds great. But it's like, well, when we hire people and I'm doing interviews, I'm trying to pick up if that person has those traits. Are they going to do soulful work? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is no, I don't care how great their alumni is, I'm not going to hire them. The next thing is we never compromise. We're detail oriented. So we never compromise means that we do our best work, even if that's in the face of saying to the customer, hey, customer, we need another 3 weeks. Well, I want it now. Doesn't matter. You've come to us. We do good work. We need 3 weeks, right? So this is in our contracts. This is something that's a part of our company. This is what we explain to clients up front. So this the values really flesh out how you should be operating your company. So we start off with the values. That turns into, you know, talking about why the company exists. Who is the company for? What do our customers want? What makes us special? What makes us unique? We go through a rigorous activity of questions to really start defining everything. The whole purpose here is we're trying to figure out who are we? What's our personality? What's our purpose? Who is our audience? Mm-hmm. What do they care about? And how do we connect ourselves to our customer as effective as possible? So it's sticky and it's comprehensive. Because if we can't stick to our customers, then we're just advertising. Branding is like sticky. So like we have to make the personality attractive. We have to make the message interesting. We have to create and spark curiosity. So we go through this strategy first. Once we have this defined, like here's our audience, here's our message, here's our position in the market, here's who we're trying to be, here's how we're different to everybody else. Once you have the psychology component, this is like the 90 percentile of branding. Only 10% of branding is design. So once you have the personality and all this psychology component figured out, then it's like, Okay, now that we have this, what logo would signal this to the world? What color palette would help us message these things that we stand for? What taglines are going to help us communicate this in four words or less? Right? So we build the big behemoth and then we break it down into a logo, into a company name, into a color palette, into the right batch of typography, into a good content. Like this is how we back to back build amazing brands is because we flip it, we invert it. You have to go and do strategy first and the strategy should feed the design. You shouldn't try to have the design feed the strategy. It doesn't work that way.
So kind of like backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the step most business owners skip. They just go straight to design and then straight to marketing. And then they're like confused. Why isn't our message connecting with our target audience? Well, they don't even know who they are, let alone the psychology traits of their target audience. They might have done some testing, they might have done some demographics, but it's not sticky. So branding is sticky. How do I get in their head? So here's an example. If you think of a search engine, Google comes to mind. If you think of a soft drink or a soda, Coca-Cola comes to mind. If you think about a service mailing company, FedEx, right? So like these companies own retail in your head. They've been messaging you for years. So how can you have that same psychological effect when somebody thinks about beauty salon, your business comes up? When they think about, oh man, I want to buy some coffee online, your company comes up. Like, how do you own that retail in their head? You have to get them emotionally. Otherwise, they're just going to forget you. Like if you think about when you were a child, you know, what's the best memory you had with one of your parents? It's probably not what activity you were doing. It's probably how you felt in a specific moment. So customers remember a moment far sooner than they'll remember what you said.
It's very true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually emotions and feelings, and then the repetition of something is the two components of remembering things much faster. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It's like, if you can invoke an emotion, whatever that may be. But then, so you would say people, the biggest, the common mistake that you see in branding is that when people want to start a brand, they kind of like rush through this phase of figuring out their brand identity and, you know, what their values are and who their audience really is and what kind of emotion they want to invoke in their audience or in their buyers. And in doing so, they kind of like miss out the whole point of branding, basically.
Yeah, it's almost like they think they know branding, but they're missing the mark, because branding is deeply psychological. And it's signaled with these motifs. Like a logo is just a motif. It's just a signal. It's just you sending a radio signal into the world, and then maybe someone will pick it up on their receiver, right? That's all it is. But the message behind the logo, that's, you got to flesh that thing out and you got to be thorough. Like, you know, if you want to build, you know, like I have people coming to me all the time, Dane, I'm building the next Gymshark. I found the supplier for Gymshark. I'm going to create a dope logo with an eagle on it. I'm going to do a similar name or just similar website, and I'm going to make $1 billion. Right. But they don't know the mission statement behind Gymshark. They can only see the surface level stuff. They don't know what's behind the strategy. They don't know what's behind the psychology. They don't know how they're gravitating their audience to them. So it's easy to say, oh, I can see that company's doing something, I'll duplicate it. But this is like, it's like an iceberg. There's this behemoth beneath the surface that is behind that, what you can see and what they're signaling. So you're exactly right. I think people, they just need to take a little bit more time. Sit with someone that can look from the outside in, because sometimes when we're building our business, we're looking from the inside out, we're motivated by, I got to get results, I got to pay the bills, I got to pay my staff. There's so much that a business owner has to think about. It's hard for them to hit pause, zoom out to 10,000 feet and go, maybe this isn't really working, right? So what we try to do when we work with a business, they're so close to their business, We want to go out to 10,000 feet, and we want to look at that business from the eyes of the consumers, from the eyes of the marketplace, and go, well, now that we're at 10,000 feet, we can see you've got 18 competitors surrounding you and they're getting attention in all these different creative ways. All of a sudden you don't look so special anymore, because we're looking at everything. We're not just looking at your business. So you can say, I'm trustworthy, I've got the best product. But hey, when we zoom out, man, the marketplace doesn't know that.
Yeah,
because they're looking at all these other brands and all these other messages. So we have to go out to 10,000 feet. We have to look at the brands in a real forensic way, and then we go into now that we know the marketplace, let's go back and let's pick our tribe in the marketplace that we want to own, and let's promote to them. So Marty Neumeier and Al Reese have a really great quote, which is, you know, rather than trying to build a parade, find a parade and get in front of it. Meaning that there's a tribe out there that would like to buy your future product. Mm-hmm. You have to go out there and lead the parade. And that's what Liquid Death have done. That's what Nike did in its heyday. That's what these companies are doing. They find a parade. Let's get in front of the parade and lead it. toward our brands. That's where it has to get emotional. It has to be more than products and services.
Yeah, so it becomes more like a leadership type thing than anything else really at that point. Because it's basically saying what you're looking for is out there. You don't have to create it really. You're just leading it.
Yeah.
There's an art form of doing that.
Exactly. And there's famous quotes where people say like, you know, well, but Steve Jobs, he hated marketing and he hated his marketing team and all the rest of it. But if you dig deep enough, you can find a lot of videos where Steve Jobs was like doing a lot of marketing. Like he was doing a lot of like A/B testing. He was bringing in people from his community and unveiling the Macintosh when it was brand new and saying, hey guys, like have a go, tell me what you think. So he was testing prototypes on the marketplace to build the best products. And this is where a lot of business owners miss the mark is they think the same as the consumer. They think that, oh, I know my consumer, therefore I think like them. The first rule I learned in marketing when I studied marketing from Mark Ritson, he'd worked with companies like Starbucks and Heineken and Coca-Cola. And Mark Ritson said to me, he said, Dane, the first rule of marketing is that you have to admit that you don't know anything. As soon as you walk into a new business, you don't know the consumer. Like never assume you know what the consumer wants. And he's like, here's an example. So like, if you look at Jeff Bezos, who's the CEO of Amazon, he was able to go and build this behemoth of a company. However, he didn't do it off his own ego or off his own esteem or off his own arrogance. Maybe he is now, I don't know. But back when he was building the company, he was constantly communicating with his audience and saying, what do you want more of? Like, what do you like about the site? Yeah. What do you not like about the site? What's missing? And when he sold books, DVDs, and CDs, and that's all he sold when Amazon was, I think, in the early 2000s, he sent an email out to 1,000 people and he said, hey, tell me what else you would like to buy on Amazon.com.
And everything.
He got an email back and it said a list of everything. Some people even said like, I want windshield wipers for my car. Another lady said, I want boots to walk outside in the wintertime. And he's just like, okay, well, maybe I could turn this into an online.
He was like, damn, that just changed the whole game.
So one moment, one email and 1,000 responses in the period of 24 hours changed his entire company's trajectory. And that's because he went to the customers and said, what do you want? And he didn't assume he knew what they wanted. Ooh. He was like, I'm just going to ask them. So business owners, the other thing that they skip is they don't talk to the consumers. They assume, oh, my consumers want this. But if you go and talk to them and talk to enough of them, not your friends, not your neighbor, not your sister, not someone that works for your company's friends, like the actual marketplace. And if you get them to tell you what they really think, then you could start pivoting before problems arise. And here's the thing. Statistics show that more than 86% of your competitors don't do that. In any industry, like in the totality of industries, 86% of your competition never ask for feedback. Don't, and they think they do. I think it's something like 94% of businesses think that they do, but 86% don't. So like the point is, how do you want to get ahead of the competition with marketing? I'm not talking about branding now, but I'm talking about marketing. Go talk to your community, like go listen to them, go run surveys and try to spend time with them and go, And almost like a journalist, like, I'm just here to learn, Mr. Customer. Like, what do you want more of? And I think if that became the relationship of a lot of businesses, they would perform a lot better.
Yeah. I can really see a difference when I'm in Los Angeles. Like, every time, I realize this all the time. When I, like, let's say, go to the hair salon and just get a blowout. Or even sometimes when I, like, go to, like, a boutique coffee shop or anything, like even sometimes like a private store, they always like send you an email or a text where it asks you like, can you fill this survey? And when I go back home to San Jose, which is like, you know, a smaller city than LA and, you know, not nearly as advanced, that never happens. Like businesses never really like send you a follow-up survey and like asking you, hey, what did you think of our service? Or like, how can we improve? Or, you know, is there anything you would like to like let us know? Doesn't happen. But like, you know, big cities like here, I feel like competition is so tight and people want to get ahead so much more that it really drives the businesses to think creatively and like think, okay, how can we be of more and better service to people. So I see that a lot more here than like other cities.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, I like what you said there is, you know, businesses need to think more creatively. Like another example is like, if you look at Dyson as a vacuum company, I used to work at a vacuum shop. So like, I know way too much about vacuum brands. It's kind of sad, but I used to spend like all day, every day pouring sand on mats and vacuuming it up and selling these luxurious vacuums. Yeah. Right. So what I learned in that process is that Hoover vacuums are pretty terrible. But I'd sold a lot of them. The point is like Hoover dominated the market for like, I don't know, like 76, 80 years, like dominated, like nobody could compare, complete monopolization of the marketplace. People felt that Dyson came out of nowhere, but the truth is it took Dyson 14 years to raise enough capital to launch effectively into the marketplace because they were constantly being beaten down by these tyrants. And everybody thought, well, who wants a bagless vacuum? That's stupid. Like, I've got a Hoover, I need bags. Like, it can't be any good. And Hoover ran campaigns to say that, you know, bags are the thing that keeps your air clean and all the rest of it. How could you ever trust a bagless vacuum? The point is Dyson persisted. And when the timing was right in the marketplace in Japan, that's where they got their initial success, was they did a bright pink vacuum in a catalog and it sold out across Japan because a lot of women were like, this is awesome. This is a product for me. Like, I want to use
vacuum.
This.
Yay.
Yeah. Like a pink vacuum. And I think this was like in the early, I think it was like in the early 90s or something like that. And I don't know if you remember, but like people used to hand like catalogs out on the doors.
Yeah.
And it was a stick bagless vacuum. And it was just like, well, a lot of people felt that, you know, well, great. I don't want to have a bag in my vacuum. This is wonderful. Had an amazing success. And then they used that momentum to roll out in the UK and the US. The point being is that like they introduced creativity into something that was a household item. Like they made vacuuming sexy. They made vacuuming cool. They made it interesting. They used bright, vivid, wacky colors to make it a bit like, well, this is different. So like differentiation and trying to spark some type of creative can really revolutionize your company. Right. Like so many businesses, they just need to be different, stop playing it safe, and they could really start getting eyeballs on their company. Yeah.
So it's amazing to hear all these really big brand names and how they conducted their business and now they're huge success. It's easy to see that. But let's say like a smaller brand, whether they're selling something tangible or if it's a service, let's say they go through the whole branding, you know, phase that you told me and they figure all of that things. What would be, after you figure out your, you know, your art and your, well, your design and your logo and your audience and your values and everything, what do you think would be the first step right after that to gain the trust? And attention, well, first attention and then trust of your customers when you're new.
Yeah, really great question. For me as an agency owner, my first objective, once we've created everything for a customer, is I have to get them to feel confident that they can consistently deploy the branding. Because branding isn't, all right, my brand's done, next. It's business owner, like you have to actively develop this day after day. Like now you've got your toolbox, you have to learn how to utilize your branding. So the first step is we educate the business owners on how they should be using the branding first and foremost. And then from that, it's like they have onus, they have responsibility, they have accountability now for like, okay, now I have my brand, I know how to use it. Then what's the next step? The next step is obviously you have to repaint everything your brand touches. So like the website needs to be updated, content needs to be updated. Everything should look consistently cohesive. We call it brand extendability. Does your logo apply well to social media, to the website, to collateral print, to the packaging, whatever your brand's touching? It needs to be updated to be all cohesive.
Once
that's done, that's when you want to start deploying advertising and marketing. So now that you're moving into advertising and marketing, that's when you know you can be effective. Why? Because you should have your taglines. You should have your messaging. You should have, you know, examples of the photography and how the photography should be edited and examples of the shapes and like all the visual stuff is then fed into the marketing and advertising system. So if it's an e-commerce store, typically it's like, well, we're going to run ad campaigns. We're going to do SEO. We're going to have to do an email nurture campaign, and we're going to have to collect emails and really build a community around this. If it's something else, like it's a service-based company, it's usually they update their visual aesthetics, and then they could start doing something like, we're working with a law firm based out of Los Angeles, and they're doing bus backs, and they're doing billboards, and they're sponsoring little sports teams, and they're sponsoring charities, and they're going to events. And that's drumming up a lot of attention. Why? Because people can't help but look at the branding. They're like, what is this new Me Lawyers brand? It looks so different to the, you know, the law firms that we're used to here in LA. They got radio jingles on the radio ads, and it's all around building this feeling that we're trying to make around making legal cases approachable, welcoming, simple, and fun versus big, scary, and audacious.
Right.
So we're just approaching the market in a different way. And depending on the business, each business is going to have what we call a different marketing mix. So, you know, if you have anyone that comes to you and says, hey, we've got a plan for your business before they even run a diagnosis, run. Like, that person does not know marketing.
You know what they're doing, yeah.
Real marketing is, tell me, Mr. Customer, everything about your business. Tell me your books. Tell me your payroll. Tell me how much money you're making every month. Show me where those leads are coming in from. Show me the data behind how much people averagely spend. Do they buy a second, a third, a fourth product? Like, a proper marketing company will run a legitimate stack of diagnostics. So what we typically do is we build the brands, we kind of educate them and launch them into the market, and then we partner them with a marketing company that we believe is going to support them on what we think they should be focused on.
Right.
And then the customer can come back to us and anytime they need support to say, hey, Rival, I'm about to do a new campaign with this marketing company. I need 10 posters to put up around the city, or I need a radio jingle. Can you guys write a radio jingle for me? You know, so we support brands continuously with this stuff, but we don't do marketing as an agency, but we try to plug them into a good team that can help them consistently run their marketing campaigns.
Right. So that's a great answer. And to summarize that, it's basically, after you do your branding correctly,
yep,
it's good to stay consistent.
Absolutely.
And then go after advertising.
Yeah. And here's a cool thing. You don't have to spend a lot of money. You just have to find someone that really knows what they're doing. So, typically when companies work with us, we'll tell them, these are probably the places that you should be advertising, and this is maybe the marketing you should be doing, but we'll let a separate company diagnose that problem, and then we'll support them on that push. But yeah, if you're listening to this and you're running a small business, you just have to get a guideline. You just have to be like, okay, I need a brand guideline, no matter how, you know, how comprehensive it is. And a brand guideline should really just make sure you keep the dialogue around your target customer. That's really it. Keep the design in the same place, keep the dialogue in the same place, and that way you're not confusing people. So really, if you can, what is effective branding? It's a really focused message, consistently signaled, and you don't change it. You don't waver from it. You just constantly keep building it. It might feel monotonous, and CEOs always want to go and change things and do new things, but branding should
be consistent and then have patience.
You got to be very patient. You're going to have consistency. And branding is a long game. It's like 6 months or more.
Six months is not that long.
Not really, but it's like, marketing is like, I want to get results right now. I got to pay the bills. Branding is like, how do I build a community over the next 12 months? How do I collect 5 hardcore fans every day through good content or a good email campaign or what have you?
Do you believe in email lists? Do you think they're very important? Or
I think so, especially for e-com. I don't utilize them really, because like, we've got such a big Instagram community. Yes. However, I believe email is making a great comeback, at least now during COVID. People are reading emails. Like, almost every email we send marketing wise gets opened and looked at. So I believe, I don't know much about it, like I can't really speak to it, but I certainly agree that it is an effective tool. And we have had clients make a lot of money from their email lists.
And when it comes to websites, would you say there's a big difference in the results people get when they hire a web developer and web designer to do it for them? Or let's say when they do it with Shopify or Squarespace themselves?
Yeah, I mean, we build Shopify stores and websites, and typically building the platform, it's all about creating an immersive experience that people can enjoy and navigate quickly. Mm-hmm. As far as like how to succeed, it has to be, you have to have a good marketing campaign. Like we've built and seen built a lot of fantastic e-commerce websites, but unless the CEO is deploying good marketing, it kind of sits there dormant, you know? So mm-hmm. Just because you have a website there doesn't mean you're entitled to customers. And doesn't mean that you're going to be successful. You can have the best website in the world. No one's going to see it. What really matters is having a clear message, making sure you have an immersive experience, and then making sure that you have a game plan to get your voice into the market so people can see you.
So it's not important to necessarily, you know, spend the money and get a web designer. You can just do it yourself for free.
Yeah, I mean, at least to begin with, if you have the budget, absolutely, you know, get a good team to build and develop it. However, if you're running on a bootstrap budget and you've got 20 grand to start your company and you need to spend 10 grand on the products and you need to spend $2,000 on an ad campaign and then you need to spend another 2.5 grand on a logo, like you have to be fickle. You have to be savvy about it. And,
you have 20,000. I mean, a lot of people start a business with like $0.
I did. Yeah. I started my business with negative. Like I was $90,000 in debt. I was so poor, I couldn't even buy a coffee on my lunch break, like when I started my business. So, had I forgotten my lunch for work, I wouldn't have been able to eat. So, I think, like it's always about momentum. Like you don't need to have a brand strategy to start a business. I didn't have one when I started and I made a lot of money. I certainly created a brand strategy when I was scaling and I was profitable. I was like, okay, now's the time to take this serious, right? So if you're a new business owner and you're running on a bootstrap budget, like all you need to think about is I need to produce sales and I need to create momentum and I need to connect with people and constantly pivot until I can get this thing profitable. Then when you've got enough money in the war chest as a surplus, then you can go, cool, let's do a better logo. Let's do some brand strategy. Yeah.
Good for you, man. I'm glad to hear you're making really good money from Rival. And let me ask you this, what made you want to misspell Rival?
Well, the correct spelling was taken. we pay quite a lot of money for the domain. We liked misspelling it because it was interesting.
I see a lot of brands doing that, like really successful brands. Now they do that like on purpose. I thought yours would be on purpose too.
Yeah. Like we actually liked, like if I had the choice between the way it's spelled now and how it's kind of rolling out and Rival, I would have still picked the Y because it's distinctive. It sticks in people's minds. They ask us questions about why we did that. It creates curiosity and it's an interesting word mark. Like the word mark, the way it locks up, it's memorable. People remember it.
Yeah,
so for us, it's if you're thinking about building a website, like you want to try to own the .com, like no matter what you do, try to own the .com. Otherwise people can argue that, you know, that they have authority over that particular name.
Get it trademarked.
So like there's a lot of real estate owned in the website space. So we had to pay, I think, you know, quite a good chunk of money, like a painful amount of money for rival.com. Yeah. For us, it's worked out fantastic because we wanted a name for the company that signaled, hey, we're not a standard agency. We're rebellious, outlawish, you know, abstract, obscure, punchy agency. Like
we're not a regular brand.
So Rival just captured that. And we figured that, okay, this is the name to go with. Let's roll.
Thank you so much for showing up and giving
me I really did have a great time, and we should definitely do this again sometime. And I got to say, like you got some great questions. You really made me think today. I'm so passionate about branding, and I think that, you know, anyone that would take heed from this message today, I think that you can do it. Like it doesn't have to be a lot. You don't have to kind of go hell for metal out of the gate. You can just start asking yourself like, hey, maybe I should build my values. Maybe I should, you know, start creating some messaging. So you just start small and build momentum.
Yeah,
start somewhere, build momentum.
It's just like when you build something and you want it to like take off quickly and so you can like sell and everything, you don't want to go through that like, you know, tedious work of like, you know, like doing this and that. So, you know, that's where you guys come in and obviously do a great job. And so, yeah, thank you so much for the good tips. And thank you everybody for listening. Bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye.